Today on Vox Talks Economics, how can we do a better job of targeting assistance in low-income countries? Welcome to Vox Talks Economics from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name's Tim Phillips. Every week we're bringing you the best new research in economics. So remember to hit the button, mark subscribe, and do follow us on Instagram, and then you can find clips and previews of our episodes. Now, every day we hear about new applications of AI and machine learning in rich countries, but far less about its use cases in the rest of the world. A new working paper shows how machine learning and mobile phone data could target humanitarian aid more effectively, and not just in theory. Joshua Blumenstock of Berkeley and CPR is one of the authors. Josh, welcome to Vox Talks Economics.
Hi, Tim.
Vox Talks did some interviews, I remember, last year about how to target COVID humanitarian assistance to the millions, hundreds of millions of people who needed help in low-income countries at the time. But I remember that many of the economists pointed out that accurate targeting would take too long or would miss too many people who were in need at that time. Why does this sort of thing happen?
I think the real issue is the data that's used to enable accurate targeting. In order to target the poorest people, you have to have some idea of who the poorest people are. And in a lot of low and middle income countries, the government and humanitarian organizations don't have that data. So a couple statistics that we cite in the paper. One is only half of the poorest countries have completed a census in the last 10 years. Oh. And then a second is more than a quarter of the world's children under five are not registered at birth. So it's just a lot of the population that you might want to provide aid to is not really in those government registries. And so, you know, in the academic debate, these were some of the people you spoke to previously, growing interest in some form of universal eligibility,
such as
universal basic income programs. And those are great, but they're very expensive. In a lot of settings, it's just not feasible. And in those settings, you ideally want to have accurate targeting.
Does this mean the combination of those two factors, that humanitarian assistance will always be inefficient when there's a crisis?
That's a tough question. I think targeting assistance in a crisis is not always inefficient, but it is uniquely challenging, even during normal times, right? Without a crisis, program targeting is very complex and it can be very contentious. So it involves, on the one hand, philosophical questions about what types of people should be prioritized to receive assistance. There's also political questions about who gets to make those decisions and who is empowered to be represented. And then, of course, and this is really what we're focused on, the more nitty-gritty practical questions of, once you know who you want to get benefits to, how do you actually find those people and give them the benefits? So there's been a lot of studies of targeting in the economics literature. There was a meta-analysis from several years ago that studied 25 anti-poverty programs. And just to give you a sense of the magnitude of how complex it is, they found that in a quarter of those programs, the targeting was actually regressive, meaning that the poor people received less benefits than the non-poor. And that's not in a crisis. So when you have a crisis, then there are additional complications that come into play. And so one is, and this is a really tough one, is that crises often change the complexion of who has the most immediate need. So for instance, in the current COVID crisis, the World Bank estimates that about 100 million new people have fallen into extreme poverty. So if a program that was designed 2 years ago updated a social registry, there's 100 million people that really aren't on the books as being in extreme poverty. A second challenge is that's particularly difficult in a crisis is that you have to have a really fast response. So under normal circumstances, maybe you'd spend a year collecting data, updating your government registry, but in the middle of a crisis, you can't do that. And then I guess there's like a third complication that's somewhat unique to COVID, which is that you don't want a lot of face-to-face contact. And so these are the sort of challenges that a lot of these humanitarian organizations have been struggling with.
I see. It was a simple question, but a really complicated answer, isn't it? So you're looking in this paper at a real life example of targeting. Tell us about Novisi in Togo.
Togo is a small country. It's about 8 million. It's in West Africa. It's like a skinny, tall country sandwiched between Benin and Ghana. And the way the Novici program came about was when COVID cases first started to arrive in Togo in early 2020. I think it was March of 2020. Like many other countries, the government imposed curfews and lockdown orders that were designed to prevent the spread of COVID. But these lockdown orders also forced a lot of people to stop working. And so this raised a lot of concerns about increases in poverty and food insecurity. And so that's sort of the context where the Novici program itself was launched.
And at the time it was launched for COVID relief, how was the government targeting that aid?
Yeah, so the Novici program, and I think the Togolese government deserves a ton of credit for their efforts in building and releasing the Novici program so quickly. So Novici, it's a Ewe word for solidarity. Mm-hmm. And you know, the stated goals of Novici were always to put cash in the hands of the people who needed it most. But you know, circa March, April 2020, when the Togolese government launched Novici, they were in the same boat as a lot of countries that we've been describing, where they didn't have an up-to-date social registry of the sort that would normally be used to target this sort of anti-poverty program. In Togo, the most recent census was completed in 2011, so 10 years ago. And even that census didn't collect data on household poverty. So, you know, the government didn't have a lot of data to use to guide the delivery of the Novici program. So they were very sort of creative. And I think they took the initiative and they said, okay, well, what data do we have? And at the time, the most comprehensive data set they had that sort of covered the largest portion of the population was a voter registry that was updated in late 2019. Mm-hmm. And in that voter registry, people indicated their location because they needed to know what polling center to go to, and they indicated their occupation. So the government said, hey, well, these lockdown orders are forcing people primarily in the urban areas to stop working. And they thought it would primarily be affecting people working in informal jobs. So they said, all right, we're going to make benefits available to anyone who's registered to vote in these particular urban areas and who's listed themselves in an informal occupation. When we came into the picture, that was how the program was designed.
When you got involved with this, I imagine that you didn't have much time to carefully work out what you were going to do. How much time pressure were you on? What was your deadline?
Yeah, it's definitely not the sort of timeline that academic researchers that I've gotten used to as an academic researcher. So we came into the picture in late spring, early summer of last year. And the goal was to launch an expanded Novici program in fall of that year. So the first transfers of that second phase of Novici, which we helped them design, went out in late October, early November. So there was really just a few months to get our act together.
Right. So first of all, the first thing you did was you used satellite images, didn't you, to predict what local consumption would be. How do you do this and how granular can you get with that?
Yeah, I won't go into all the technical details unless you prod me, but
Probably won't. Yeah.
The idea here, again, is you have to put yourself in the mindset where the government of Togo really didn't have an up-to-date poverty map that would tell them at anything below the state level of what the average consumption or wealth of households in that region are. And so when they were designing the expansion of Novici, they wanted to prioritize the poorest villages, sort of the poorest small regions. And so we worked with them to basically construct a very high resolution poverty map. So the end product is a map that tells the average wealth of each canton, which is roughly a county. It's the smallest administrative unit in Togo. But as you noted in the beginning, to get there, what we did was we applied artificial intelligence algorithms, these deep learning algorithms, which are the same algorithms that are used if you go to like search for an image online. You know, if you type in pussycat into Google and you see a bunch of pictures of cats, those are the same deep learning algorithms are being used behind the search algorithm. But we repurposed these algorithms so that they could process satellite imagery. And the intuition here, again, not the technical details, but the intuition is that if you look at an overhead satellite image, you know, high resolution close up of a village, you as a person can roughly tell if it's a very wealthy village or not, right? And say in rural Togo, wealthy villages tend to have a lot of metal roofs. They tend to have high quality roads. They have very distinct plots of land for each house. Versus if you look at a poorer village, it would have a lot of thatched roofs, a lot of overlapping land plots, and you know, they just look very different. And machine learning algorithms, which at their heart are just sophisticated technologies for pattern recognition, can pick up those patterns. And so that's how we end up with a map of poverty based on the satellite imagery.
Right, and you're combining this with mobile phone data, aren't you? So what does the mobile phone data give you? What does it help you to estimate?
Yeah, so the goal there is to provide a way for the government to target transfers, not just at entire villages, but to also try and prioritize the poorest people within the poorest villages. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, you're probably aware of this, as I'm sure most of the people listening to this podcast are, that there's been massive growth in mobile phone penetration in even the poorest countries in the world over the last decade.
Yes.
And so if you look at Togo, something like 80 to 90% of households have one or more mobile phones. And so the idea here is if you can pick out the phones that belong to the poorest households, then that might provide a way to transfer money to those poorest households. Because I should have mentioned this earlier, the Novisi platform that the government built used mobile money to deliver benefits, right? So they didn't send out an army of people to hand cash to the head of household at their front doorstep. What they did is they essentially transferred money over the mobile phone network to the mobile phones of the people who were eligible for the program. And so what we did is, because the transfers were already being delivered via mobile money, that basically meant that anyone who was going to be eligible for this program had to have a mobile phone. So what we did again was use sophisticated machine learning algorithms to try and identify who the poorest mobile phone owners were. And again, intuition, and you can ask me for the details if you want them, but if you don't, I won't give them. The intuition is that very wealthy people in Togo use their phones differently than very poor people. Very wealthy people, for example, may make a lot of international calls. They may spend a lot of money each month on phone calls and other things. And very poor people are different. And if you have the right data to train these machine learning algorithms, and that's a key piece of this puzzle, is getting ground truth data that you trust. And in this case, what we did is we conducted a survey of about 15,000 people immediately prior to expanding the program. So this was in like September of last year. And we used the data from that survey to train these machine learning algorithms so that they could then pick out the poorest people. And those were the people who in the end receive benefits.
Couldn't you just reason that the people that spent the least on their mobile phones were probably the poorest and target the assistance in that way?
Yeah, that's a really good point and a really good question. And it's one that came up with the people designing Novisi. Mm-hmm. I think the short answer is you could, and it might be reasonably accurate, but it's not going to be nearly as accurate as a targeting algorithm that uses all of the data available at its disposal. And this is actually analysis that we do in the paper. So one of the counterfactuals that we compare our method to, and our method is based on machine learning, and it uses literally hundreds, if not thousands, of measures of how each person uses their phone, is a much more parsimonious approach that just looks at one indicator, which is how much did they spend in the last month on their mobile phone bill? And that method is much less accurate.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about the accuracy of this. How good were you able to get this aid targeting? Because I guess it's quite hard to have a comparison against what it could have been.
Yeah, it is a tough question that we struggled with. I mean, I think at a high level, there are lots of ways that you can evaluate a cash transfer program. You might think about how fast was it? You might think about how much did it cost? What was the overhead in administering the program? And many other factors that would weigh in the policy decision. I think what you're sort of pointing at is this question of accuracy. Mm-hmm. In other words, how effectively does one approach get cash to the poorest people in the country relative to the other approaches that were available? And so this is really what the working paper dives into in great detail, is we use several different sources of survey data to contrast the effectiveness of different targeting approaches. So, you know, the main approach that we focus on is the one I've described that we've been talking about, that uses satellite data and mobile phone data in combination with machine learning to pick out the poorest people. We contrast that with the government status quo approach, which targeted people by occupation. We contrast it with a geographic universal eligibility program, where you say, all right, well, maybe you won't go into as many villages, but you'll provide benefits to everyone in a small number of villages. And then we contrast it to a couple of methods that the government didn't actually have available to them at the time, but that are very common in targeting social assistance. Things like a proxy means test or an asset-based index, which, again, maybe the details aren't so important, except to point out that to do those latter things, you need a level of data access that the government of Togo didn't have. But we do the comparison just because in other countries, in other contexts, it is a relevant comparison. Mm-hmm. And in short, what we find is that the targeting method based on phone and satellite data significantly reduces targeting errors, basically significantly reduces errors of exclusion relative to the other options available to the government. And those options were the geographic targeting approach and the occupation-based targeting approach. On the other hand, we find that this new phone satellite method is typically, it sort of depends a little bit, but typically not as accurate as methods that rely on comprehensive household survey data. So that would be options like a proxy means test or an asset-based wealth index.
So those errors of exclusion means you find the people who are in need and you manage to give them assistance. What about at the other end? Do you manage not to give assistance to people who don't really need it?
That's exactly right. So I focused on these errors of exclusion because I think those are the ones that people are really worried about,
yes,
right?
Yes.
The really needy people who, because of something wrong with the design of the program, don't get paid. There's also the other side of the coin, which we refer to as errors of inclusion, which is non-poor people that end up getting benefits that maybe they don't need. Now, again, in a place like Togo, we're not so worried about that because the people who are getting paid who are non-poor, they're not like wealthy, right? They maybe are just above the poverty line, but we still quantify those. And in the paper, we provide fairly detailed analysis of this, and it is exactly the same as the story with exclusion errors. So with inclusion errors, they're lower with our method than with occupation-based or geographic targeting, and they tend to be higher than methods that rely on comprehensive household survey data.
Now, as you point out, that comprehensive data doesn't exist in Togo. So if you're the policymaker, are you confident that you're doing as well as you can by applying this method nationally or maybe expanding it so that you could give assistance outside of a crisis? This would be a good method for doing that?
That is sort of the million-dollar question here. And it's not something that we can really adjudicate in the paper, right? The paper is really just about evaluating this one particular method in this one particular context. Now,
yes,
that said, it is something that we've reflected on quite a bit. And I think the key conclusion from our work is that in certain situations, this new method is more effective at putting cash in the hands of the poor than other available methods. But this method, like every other method, and there's been dozens of studies of those other methods, is not perfect. There are unfortunately going to be very poor people that are inadvertently excluded from receiving benefits, even when you're using this phone and satellite-based method. And again, this is true of every targeting methodology that's implemented in a real-world program, but it's something that's important to acknowledge. So at the end of the day, I think it's important to emphasize that we're not arguing that this method should replace other methods like a proxy means test or community-based targeting, but rather it's something that should complement them. So the real question facing policymakers after this study is, how do you build a layered and integrated system for social protection that uses all of the methods at your disposal in order to ensure that the resources go to the people that need them? In other words, we think this paper adds a new tool to the toolkit, but it's the policymaker's job to use all of the tools at her disposal.
Fascinating. It's not very often that we cover an entirely new tool, and these are really important questions. Josh, thank you very much for talking to me about them today.
Thank you, Tim.
So if you want to read this discussion paper at the CEPR, it is DP16385, titled Machine Learning and Mobile Phone Data Can Improve the Targeting of Humanitarian Assistance. And the authors are Emily Aitken, Suzanne Bellew, Christopher Udry, Dean Carlin, and Joshua Blumenstock. This has been a Vox Talk from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. Every week we bring you the most important latest research. And if you want to know what you will be reading in journals 18 months from now, listen to Vox Talks Economics Today. And there are literally hundreds of Vox Talks in the archives if you're a subscriber. So don't miss out.